5 o'clock, DJ Horns. Only means one thing. It's a Tischler Tuesday here on the Hoffman Show. It's also a Victory Tuesday, and it is time for Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
It's just in.
Not My Beat.
Mitch Tischler was there last night in Cincinnati. Of course, the co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast with J.P. Finley. And Mitchell, there is only one place I am legally allowed to start with you. A former offensive lineman.
You better be going to the right place.
Yeah, a former offensive lineman who loves breaking down the big guys. Like, we had a thick six last night. Trent Scott is the receiver on Jaden Daniels' first career touchdown pass. Is that the greatest moment of football you have ever covered in your entire life?
I mean, it's pretty close. You know, we could just play air horns for the next 10 minutes, and I think it would accurately represent how everyone's feeling after last night's game. But on top of it, to get the thick six, to get the touchdown throw to Trent Scott, for him to catch the ball, for him to get the dance going, Allegretti, those guys all surrounding him. You know, first big man touchdown for the Washington franchise since 1984, and the team is 5-0 in its history when an offensive lineman scores a touchdown. To me, that says this team needs to run back that play that much more often.
Anthony, can you believe the stats that Mitchell just brought to our show?
That's actually crazy.
I expected a great answer from that. I did not. Mitch, I was unprepared for the brilliance you just brought. That is unbelievable information.
I'm here for all of the big man touchdowns, and I will research stats until the sun comes up. If we're talking about those guys scoring.
So there's one that you did not mention that perhaps, I don't know, I guess it's a pop quiz to see if I can get you on or see if you know. I didn't do any research. This just popped across my Twitter timeline, which is really what research is in 2024. Do you know the last quarterback to have their first career touchdown pass go to a big fella, to an offensive lineman?
I believe I saw it was the year 2000, but I don't know. I don't know that I know who it was. Who was it?
It was J.P. Lossman in 2005 with the Bills.
I'll tell you what, I really hope that that Jaden Daniels has a better career than J.P. Lossman.
I do as well. We'll circle back to Jaden in a second, but I actually do want to talk about the line play a little bit more. I love the way Cliff Kingsbury designs his runs, and I love the way that he uses the offensive line to manipulate what defenses want to see. Like, being a linebacker playing against this offense has to be hell on earth because of the ways that Cliff Kingsbury, like, moves linemen around on that direct snap to Brian Robinson last night. They had an unbalanced line, which I didn't even realize until I played it back on film. They're rolling guy, you know, they're running power left with the line and then running the ball to the right with Eckler on the first play of the game. When you watch how Cliff is both setting up his line to succeed in the pass game and utilizing them in the run game, what stands out to you?
I mean, I think it speaks to how an offensive line group that doesn't have a ton of individual talent can be successful as a whole. When you get help from the coaching staff, and you know, you mentioned that first Eckler run, the Trent Scott touchdown is another example of it. Nick Allegretti was a false pull to the right side, and you know, obviously the throwback goes to the left. They run the unbalanced look. They do a lot of different things to help out this offensive line, and particularly in the pass game. You see what Jaden Daniels does in the backfield, all the eye candy they have, you know, with the mesh points and, you know, kind of not even the fast rollouts, but the slow rollouts for him kind of gives these guys an opportunity to, you know, turn their defenders in the right direction. And I thought the offensive line played pretty very well last night. I mean, Jaden had a ton of time to throw all night. I was extremely impressed with Brandon Coleman, who they left on an island against Trey Hendrickson way more often than I really expected them to. He's still splitting a little bit of time with Cornelius Lucas. I think last night was the night that you can kind of, you know, put your pin in Brandon Coleman's going to be your starter kind of moving forward. But it wasn't just the offensive line that was kicking butt in the blocking game. You had on the Austin Eckler touchdown, Ben Sennett, you know, basically picked up a DB and carried him through the back of the end zone to clear the way for Eckler. And then on that last Terry touchdown, Jeremy McNichols, who's, you know, playing for the injured Austin Eckler, steps up and just absolutely, I was saying, dirty danced the linebacker up in the air as he tried to blitz up the middle and flipped him upside down and ultimately gave Jaden the extra, you know, couple seconds he needed to hit Terry there. It was a total team effort, and it was very impressive to watch.
It was. I also thought Cosmi had an unbelievable night, like watching him just move people. The way he looks for work, I love. Like when you're a guard, sometimes one guy goes one way, one guy goes the other way around you, and then you're stuck there blocking no one. And some guys will just kind of stand there and kind of stick their hands out in case anyone runs into them. Cosmi will go and just find someone to drill. And I think that attitude, Mitch, like I think week over week, the play style that Dan Quinn has talked about, we're starting to see it more and more. And a lot of it's coming from some of these younger guys or guys like Bobby or Lugo that they brought in. But to see guys like Cosmi really own that as well, you see why he's the guy they gave the money to. The first in-house incumbent, if you will, to pick up an extension is Sam Cosmi. And I thought last night was a beautiful example of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the clip that you tweeted out earlier today. I didn't notice it in the moment where Cosmi kind of looked back and thought Jaden was going to be running and then realized he didn't and just kind of flopped backwards so he didn't get an illegal man downfield. I mean, the O-line, the penalties in this game were on tight ends and wide receivers, not on the O-line. They were very good. They were very, very good tonight, last night. And you know, I don't know whether it's Allegretti or Biotis that fell on the fumble from Zach Ertz in the middle of the field.
Late.
That was, you know, that's an underrated, massive play for him. And, you know, along with, you know, Cosmi being kind of the nasty guy who does a good job of finding work, with this quick pass game that they're using, having guys with that much athleticism at that size being able to work their way downfield and keep clearing paths. And, you know, I keep going back to Brandon Coleman because that's something that he can do that, you know, no other tackle on this roster can do in terms of, you know, helping out blocking downfield. It's just, you know, the defense talks all the time about wanting to play in concert, to play together. We're seeing that happen on the offense. I mean, I'm sure you've gone through all the gaudy stats of, you know, not in the Super Bowl era, have they had back-to-back no punts, no turnover games, and, you know, all those other things. But it's the little things that they're doing that are making that possible.
Mitch Tischler, Beltway Football Podcast, with us here on the Hoffman Show. So that's the good trenches, Mitch. Let's talk about the bad trenches, and then we can finish on a high note. We can save our Jaden Daniels dessert for the end, if you will. How worried are you about what is going on up front with the Commanders defense right now? Because I think it's inarguable that they are not playing well in the trenches defensively. How big of an issue it is and how worried we are, that's where the debate comes in. That's where the conversation comes in. So how worried are you about the play up front of that defensive line?
Extremely, because I am fearful that this is going to turn from a scheme issue to an attitude issue. You know, Craig, finish this sentence for me. Before the season, if we said John Allen and Daron Payne through three games have 5.5 blank, what would your answer have been?
You probably would go be looking for sacks there. I do believe that is their tackles number, though.
Correct. And, you know, they're the highest paid defensive tackle duo in the NFL. They're the second and third highest paid players, you know, on this roster. It's a problem, and I think it's a major problem. And, you know, last week you had Joe Witt Jr. talk about kind of the players that are playing his style, and I think it was just as interesting who he didn't talk about. He mentioned Bobby Wagner, Frankie Louvu, Quan Martin, that group. Didn't mention any of the guys up front. And then I think, secondly, you know, Dan Quinn is doing this, you know, rotating captains bit for each game. And you haven't had any of the defensive linemen be there, but you better believe that John Allen is the guy in the middle of the field before the game trying to hype up these players. There's a little bit of a disconnect happening here, and you've got to be very concerned about what's happening. You know, part of it is certainly the scheme and how Joe Witt uses those guys. Certainly early on in downs, you know, they want those D tackles to kind of eat up blockers so you can get the linebackers to run free. But we started to see it in last night's game a little bit, where you had John Allen, Daron Payne, and Johnny Newton all on the field at the same time, and they're moving Allen to the outside a little bit and kind of trying to find those guys in different matchups. and they still weren't really able to get to the quarterback. And obviously Burrow is, you know, extremely good at what he does and getting rid of the ball and moving around in the pocket. But, you know, those guys are getting gashed up the middle in the run game as well on a pretty regular basis. I mean, the Bengals ran for 6-plus yards per carry, and, you know, a lot of that was in between the tackles. And it just can't happen for a defense that, you know, that needs to get just a couple stops to make a 38-33 game look more like a 38-20 game. And you feel, you know, the opposite of the way you felt week one against the Bucs here.
So if I'm going to play contrarian slash optimist, there are some plays to be made, right? Like Payne has Chase Brown in the backfield for a loss of 6 last night, and then you just can't finish the play. Dante Fowler has a couple that he needs to finish. You've also faced two offenses, I would say, that are pretty good in Cincinnati, obviously, last night, and Tampa in week one. Do you buy into any of those arguments that perhaps it's getting closer, it's coming along, eventually they'll finish, or are we far enough down the pipe with this defense 3 games in slash these players and Allen and Payne that we've seen over the last couple of years seemingly deteriorate in front of our eyes that there is no spinning this?
I think if you're spinning it, you're putting on some Ashburn colored glasses and hoping that it turns and not really seeing what's happening, you know, on the field. There are plays to be made. And in week one, Daron Payne, I think, had 5 pressures of Baker Mayfield. Has only had, I think, 1 pressure of the quarterback since then. And, you know, Baker is semi-elusive, I would say. Daniel Jones obviously can use his legs pretty well. Joe Burrow isn't really elusive. I mean, he moves around in the pocket decently, but when he takes a 3 or 5 or 7-step drop, he's not clearing the pocket and throwing the ball downfield. And it's not even that they're not getting stats, which is an issue in and of itself. They're not moving the quarterbacks off of their spot. They're letting them sit back there and find somebody open. And, you know, the secondary has its own issues and aren't very good themselves. But the combination of having a D-line that can't get to the quarterback and secondary that has issues is a problem. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, Joe, we're talking about wanting to, you know, rush together and find, you know, have the front end and back end work together. All the things we've heard for years about, you know, bad Washington defenses. But one of the issues I kind of have with what Joe was calling or how they're being taught is, you know, they're bringing blitzes, not necessarily zero blitzes, but they're bringing blitzes and your corners are playing 10 yards off the receivers. And that's just easy money for any, you know, mediocre NFL quarterback to throw a 5-yard out and, you know, get into a better down distance there. And, of course, you're trying to protect from getting beat over the top. And I think a lot of yesterday's defense was bend, not break. But at some point, you know, you got to find a way to move the quarterback off his spot and not let him sit there and just pick you apart, you know, from the pocket.
My only response to that, Mitch, would be, yes, but how? This is the thing that I struggle with is I watch it back and, you know, it's something I'll talk about with Logan and trying to lean into his experience of 10 years playing in the league to see what ideas he has. But I give Joe credit that he's trying stuff. Like they're blitzing. They're moving different guys around. They're doing all the things seemingly that you'd want a defensive coordinator to do to try to generate pressure. And none of it seems to be working. And so I guess I don't know if you have any grand ideas, and it might just be eventually one of these things has to work and they have to execute better. But is there anything that they're not doing or at least trying that you wish they were? Because you're obviously correct that eventually they need to generate some pressure because the lack of it so far this year is like stunningly appalling.
Yeah, I mean, they gave up 450 yards to the Bengals, you know, offense on Monday night, which isn't good. I think what we saw yesterday might be a little bit of the game plan going forward. I mean, obviously you hope you can get a couple more stops than what they did, but, you know, what's his name? Jeremy Chinn, early on in that game, had 2 nice plays on second and third down to force the missed field goal, to force the field goal attempt that they ultimately missed. I think they're going to be playing this, you know, kind of bend, don't break style. And as long as the offense, you know, coaches love talking about complementary football, as long as the offense, the pace they're on right now isn't realistically sustainable, you know, they're gonna come back to earth a little bit. But if the offense is going to be as dominant as it is, then, you know, this might just be the way the defense is. Give them, you know, 3, 5, 7 yards a pop. You know, don't get stuck in those, you know, one-on-one situations with one of the top three receivers in the NFL giving Burrow an easy throw to just, you know, throw it up there for Chase when he's one-on-one with any defender. It might just be, hey, we're going to give up a lot of yards, but we're going to make teams earn their points, and we're going to make them, you know, get first downs and you know, keep the ball in positive down and distance to be able to keep this thing going. It's that's just as much as the offense operating the way that it is now isn't sustainable. A defense giving up this many yards isn't sustainable either, because if you had told the Bengals that they weren't going to punt the entire game, the only possession they didn't score on was going to be a missed field goal, that, you know, Jamar Chase was going to go for a $120 and Burrow was going to throw, you know, for $325, they would have told you that they were going to win that game by 3 touchdowns. And I think most NFL teams would feel that way. But Jaden Daniels was just that good that it didn't happen. It's going to be interesting because Kyler can carve him up just like anybody else. And Marvin Harrison Jr. is a young player that's getting better week by week. That Cardinals team can score some points too. So we might be in for another barn burner on Sunday.
Yeah. Mitch Sichler, Beltway Football Pod, with us here on the Hoffman Show. Except for Jaden Daniels, which, you know, it's something we might be saying around here for a long time. Like, how do you begin to describe what you saw from him last night? Like, what's the thing that when you woke up this morning, you're like, wow, I can't believe Jaden did that last night?
Yeah, I think, you know, fans are probably not on this particular play, but for me, it was the play that kind of showed me that Jaden was taking steps forward and getting better as a quarterback and playing the, you know, quarterback position, not, you know, a tuck and run guy. And it was early on in the game. They had the 4th and 2, and Jaden, you know, stuck back in that pocket. Luke McCaffrey wasn't his first read. It wasn't his second read. You know, I would argue it probably wasn't his third read either. And you saw him scan the field and get to the receiver and deliver a ball on time with the right pace. And, you know, they picked up that 4th down there. And to me, that just, you know, signified, you know, the growth that we're seeing week to week with Jaden. And I think he was 5 for 5 on the move during the game. And I liked that, you know, when he was on the move, it wasn't only looking to run downfield. It was looking to, you know, to make plays with his arm first. And I said during the game last night, I had a lot of deja vu to 2012. You know, that the New Orleans game with RG3, the big difference is that you have Jaden Daniels playing the quarterback position, and he's playing it from the pocket, and that touchdown throw to Terry is just such an emblematic play also, because he knows that there's going to be a free rusher. When teams bring a zero blitz, when teams bring a quote-unquote all-out blitz, at some point there's going to be a free rusher, and that free rusher is on the quarterback to beat, and Jaden did that. He got the O-line in the right position. He got the running back in the right position to block that thing up. And he stood in there and he took a big hit to deliver a big ball. And I just think that, you know, that shows you the type of confidence he has in himself. And you see the trust being built with the receivers and the players on that team. I mean, after the game, Nick Allegretti was talking about how when you get in the huddle in the 4th quarter in a close game and you look at your quarterback and his eyes are calm, he has this demeanor that, you know, is unflappable. He said it calms everybody else down and it makes you confident that you're going to go and do the right thing. And, you know, that's the kind of intangible thing that Jaden brings. And it was super impressive to watch last night. And I think there's a really, really bright future for this kid.
Couldn't say it better. Mitch Sichler, you can catch him on the Beltway Football Podcast with J.P. Finley. How late did y'all go last night? How late was the recording last night?
Let me tell you, Craig, it is now 5:20 p.m. On what is today, Tuesday?
Today's Tuesday.
I woke up at 10 a.m. on Monday morning, and I have yet to go to sleep. So it's been a whirlwind, but it was a ton of fun. We finished the pod at about 2 a.m., I had a 6 a.m. flight. I had a 6 a.m. flight and have had a bunch of work to do today. And I am eagerly looking forward to my head hitting the pillow at some point tonight and not waking up for a solid 12 hours.
Yeah, I was saying, what time will you go to bed tonight, or will your body tell you?
I as much as I'd like to dictate it, I think my body's going to tell me. Craig, this radio hit was my last thing of the day, and I was very excited because I love coming on with you. I love the air horns and all that. And after this, I get to take a deep breath, relax, think about how much fun the game was. I'll probably rewatch it a little bit here before I hit the hay. But it's been a really, really fun 24 hours.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Let's not hold you up any longer. Go watch the game if you must, or just now's as good a time as ever, Mitch. Just, you know, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Why not go to sleep when you've been awake since 10 a.m. yesterday? Really appreciate you doing this, man. That is some soldier level effort.
I love coming on with this. This is so much fun every week. You do a great job on the radio, so it's the least I can do.
I appreciate that, my friend, and we'll do it again next week, much better rested, and hopefully after another win. Thanks, Mitch. All right, that's Mitch Sichler, everybody, with us here on the Hoffman Show. I think, Anthony, at the very end there, Mitch's phone went to sleep. Mitch's phone was like, Mitch, you can stay awake and watch the game. I'm done.
Salute to him, man. That's tough.
That's brutal. I can't do that. I don't know how. I assume it's somewhere. Yeah, he said it was a 6 a.m. flight. I would have slept on the plane at the very least. Not that it's a super long flight from Cincinnati to here, but I would have then been like, I'm going to go back and go to bed.
Yeah, I mean, it ain't easy is what I'll say. But yeah, in the airport, on the plane, I would have, you know, got my little cat naps for sure.
Yeah, it's not the best sleep, but it's better than nothing. I think the worst, I have two that come to mind. There was one game that when I was working in Dallas, we played Seattle on like a Sunday night. And Seattle is so far away from everything. Like that Pacific, I don't think people realize how far north the Northwest is unless you spent significant time there. Like it's just so much like we think of like New York City as north or even Boston as north. Seattle is so much farther north than both of those places. Like it is an uneven curve across the United States. And so we, you know, Sunday night you finish, it's West Coast time, but still by the time we flew back, like we landed at like 5 a.m. That stunk. And then there was a Monday night game here when I was on the beat in Philly, and my hotel was like 45 minutes away from the stadium. And I think initially, like JP Finley had a hotel room, and JP was like, I'm not going to use it. Here's my room key. It's much closer. I went, his room key didn't work. So I left and went to the hotel that I initially had, which was way far away. And yeah, it was like, I probably didn't go to sleep till after 3 that night. And then I probably had to be on with the junkies the next morning.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Those were the mornings when Drab would be like, hey, what time do you want to come on tomorrow? And I would go, 9:40. Your show ends at 10,
last
right?
Last segment
9:40. How does that sound? We'll end the show because that's the best chance of me being coherent. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. When we get back, we're joined by our good friend Sherry Burris from the NFL Network. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And, of course, streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. And joining us now, an old friend. It's our pal, Sherry Burris, who now is a host of Good Morning Football, which airs Monday through Friday at 8 o'clock Eastern Time on the NFL Network. And she's also a host of Good Morning Football Overtime, which streams Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. on the Roku channel and airs locally here in D.C., on Fox 5 Plus, and that is Monday through Friday at noon. Sherry, hi. We're talking after a Commanders win. What do you know?
Hi. Whoa, how weird is this? It is so good to see you. It is so good to talk to Commanders. Winning a game. I mean, I don't need to tell you or, you know, the fans in DC just, I don't want to say it feels different because I don't want to get ahead of my skis, but kind of feels different, Craig.
Yeah, it sure does feel different. The new owner, GM, head coach, all the things are rolling in the right direction. So as you guys like put together the show, like for we talked to Jamie in the preseason, and I know enough about morning television to know like there's some pre-planning that happens the day before for the show. So like you guys are planning yesterday for the show today. Did you like, how do you plan for the possibility that the biggest upset of the weekend is going to happen? And then how do you handle that when all the things that you thought you may be talking about are all of a sudden not the things that everyone is talking about?
I think that's part of the beauty of Good Morning Football is you do sort of have at least a soft rundown, right? We probably put our answers in pencil, maybe is the best way to put it. And we kind of let the games dictate the stories and what we're going to talk about, particularly, you know, Peter being such an insider and Kyle's insight that Kyle might take you totally left field and you thought he was going to go right. And the things that, you know, we had Michael Robinson on today. So like what he sees would be different than what Jamie notices versus Kyle. So I think everyone kind of brings their own pizzazz and their own view of the same game, which when we sit down at the breakfast table and we can give our opinions and dissect these games, that's really what makes it so much fun.
As for what you guys actually dissected, like what's your takeaway from this game? I mean, Jaden's kind of the obvious, I guess, but is it him? Is there something else that you noticed? Like what is it about this game that just stuck with you as you walked into the studio this morning?
Yeah, you know, being able to have covered Washington for as many years as I have overall, I think it was 4 or 5 years, right? Being on the sidelines in the locker room with you, with the guys, what really stood out is just the confidence. I feel like particularly on offense that exuded from everybody, right? I mean, starting there with Jaden, the fact that you have this rookie third game, you know, what stands out is that clip of him looking at the sideline to Cliff Kingsbury being like, come on, like let's keep rolling here. Even Terry McLaurin saying like he came in that huddle as a rookie and said, let's go win this game. To have a young guy be able to lead grown men older than him in that moment, I think just says so much. Also, you think about Terry McLaurin, like if you look up the definition of consistency and patience, he is just tried, true, 100%. You wait for those moments because A, he's such a wonderful human being, but he's such a great football player. So to have that moment just feels like it was just such a culmination of all of it coming together finally.
You covered the Ravens quite a bit as well when you were in the area for NFL Network. Obviously, you did mostly Commanders when you were with NBC4, but then as you went to NFL Network, you were kind of Commanders-Ravens split. I'm curious what similarities you see in Lamar and Jaden, because I think during the draft process, I was resistant to a lot of those because they're different. They are different players, but I do think there's some things that are similar. I'm curious how you see that comparison as two of the most dynamic and effective runners, obviously, in the game at that quarterback position.
Yeah, and I think it would be fair that we maybe wouldn't put Jaden in that category in the beginning because obviously the college game is so much different than NFL. But now that we have the sort of small sample size, I feel like it's okay to kind of be like, hey, we're seeing the things like Lamar, like he can throw on the run. He can just tote the rock himself. And it's funny, I was talking with, we had Manti Te'o and Michael Robinson. We were just sort of talking in a commercial about what makes some of these guys so difficult to defend. And it's not just speed, but it's also like those quick movements. Like you can see Jaden put his foot in the ground and move. And that's also what Lamar can do. And that's what makes it so hard for these defenders to try to stop a guy like that. And I think we should give Jaden his flowers. He is a Heisman winner, second overall pick. I think it's okay to be able to say, like, let's appreciate all the goodness that he has. And I mean, maybe this might be a DC thing. I'm a little scared to kind of get too committed to a quarterback and afraid to get hurt again. But that's kind of what makes it, you know, beautiful and makes the good times that much better, knowing there's been sort of that suffering to get to this point.
Sherry Burris, Good Morning Football, NFL Network with us here on The Hoffman Show. I think the other piece of it, too, that I'd be so curious to hear your insight on is, like, what's said about Lamar, what's said about Jaden in terms of the competitiveness and all that kind of stuff? Because I know all the things that are said about Jaden here. When you think of your time covering Lamar and being around the Ravens, like what did people say about him as a leader, as a competitor? And I'm curious if you've heard some of those similar things as people have talked to you about Jaden.
Yeah, particularly, I guess, as you make the comparison more character-wise, I guess, than football-wise, Lamar always, you know, chatting with him. He's kind of more quiet. He kind of doesn't go much more beyond than what he needs to say in interviews. And I feel like Jaden also kind of has that cerebral, like, I'm going to just kind of be even keel, steady Eddie kind of guy, which in those big moments, that's what you want, right? Lamar getting the team all the way to the AFC Championship game. Jaden now being able to be 2-1 in his rookie year. I mean, they didn't punt in two games, right? I mean, the confidence we're seeing from him to drive this offense. You have veterans like Zach Ertz who are really buying in. I just think that the way the team is responding to Jaden shows his level of maturity, which you could definitely say kind of relates to Lamar and the fact that he's getting his guys to buy in. I mean, now we're seeing Lamar be a bit more vocal, his sense of urgency even greater to try to get to that game in February. But I think that, you know, it's the starting pieces of really seeing the character and the leadership and the man that Jaden is going to become.
You touched on Terry earlier. Just, I think those of us that covered him up close, there's such a soft spot for him seeing, you know, like what he's had to endure is you know, like a football endure. But man, has that dude had to endure a lot as a football player. So what does it mean to you to see him have those moments, especially considering it's Monday Night Football on the stage? This wasn't amidst seven other games on a Sunday at 1 o'clock. Yeah. The fact that he did that on that stage, like what do you think that says about him, and what were your kind of reaction in the moment?
He's so due. I know we're not, I might be dating myself here. We're not that far in age. I know I'm a couple of years older, but I almost look at it like a proud mom of like he's getting it. Like finally, this is the attention he deserves on a national stage. I joke, you know, his only flaw is that he went to Ohio State on Wisconsin. Absolutely love Terry just for the person he is, the player. I mean, you think about it. He was drafted in the third round. He's had 11 different quarterbacks. I mean, how many different head coaches? You could just do like a NFL 30, you know, NFL films on Terry's career to this point of all that he's gone through on and off the field, if you think about it. So the fact that Monday night, he got to have that spotlight on him in a really big moment when the team needed him most, I feel like that just all encompasses what he's brought to this organization since he got here.
Sherry Burris, of course, you remember her from NBC4 and NFL Network, now still with NFL Network, but on the West Coast doing Good Morning Football. And I'm also curious, as you've kind of expanded and gone into this national role, like what your appreciation is for the head coaching position and the different people you've covered, especially seeing the way Harbaugh does things in Baltimore with the time you spent around that team. And then what you've seen from Dan Quinn through that lens so far this season.
Yeah, and it's been really interesting, you know, getting to also do some sideline reporting for NFL when I was with CBS right after DC, doing production meetings, getting to see different coaches. It's so interesting of, you know, Coach Harbaugh definitely, you know, has his sort of routine, and their culture speaks for itself. You hear just how great the Ravens organization is, and it's just how much there's a family atmosphere, and it's very close knit. I actually had the pleasure of getting to cover Dan Quinn in Atlanta when I was in Atlanta before DC, left right before they made the Super Bowl. So I kind of got a second round with DQ there for a couple months. And he's just, the fact I think that the players can call him DQ and not just, you know, oh, Coach Quinn, there's this familiarity, right? Like he doesn't want to be this man on a pedestal, and he can really relate to players. And you know, he's his backwards hat. Like, you know, if there's a backwards hat on the field at practice, like, oh yeah, there's DQ. Like I know which one he is. So I think, you know, the fact we don't hear him barking, players really respond to him well. The conversations we did have around the draft time, he's just so personable. And I could probably have just sat there and kept talking to him about football and life, that it just, again, that also is translating that the players are not doing it just for themselves. And I wanted, you know, this is also for Dan Quinn.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think that's such a great anecdote too, about like the fact that he doesn't bark. Like there is a buy-in there that is not imposed. It is truly like because they care about him and because they care about each other. And that's the kind of the atmosphere that he creates. Sherry Burris, great to see you. Host of Good Morning Football. Of course, that airs Monday through Friday at 8 on NFL Network. Of course, you can also check out Good Morning Football Overtime Monday through Friday at 10 on the Roku channel. And if you miss that on the Roku channel, it airs locally here in DC on Fox 5 Plus Monday through Friday at noon. Sherry, great to see you, my friend. We'll have to do this again later this season. Thanks for some time, and enjoy the rest of the football week there in LA.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Miss the DC DMV area so much. So always great talking to you, Craig.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. Anthony, how would you, well, first of all, Dan Quinn just started talking, so we will keep an eye on that. Also, we have Caps preseason hockey tonight, so our show a little bit short, so we'll get back to some calls perhaps in the 6 o'clock hour. We have our pick six still to come, but we have a very important show thing we need to get to right now, because there was a very important play last night that is the first career touchdown passing for Jaden Daniels. it goes to an offensive lineman in Trent Scott, and no one had that on the bingo card. And then Trent Scott dances. And Troy Aikman made a big deal about, oh, they wanted to see what the dance was, which is always funny because, like, Aikman and Buck and the game announcers get to watch practice typically the last day before the game in a way that regular media does not. And often that's when trick plays and stuff are worked on. And a good play-by-play announcer will also ask an offensive coordinator or a head coach, like, hey, is there any trick play that I should know about that I can be prepared for just in case, because you don't want to get caught by surprise. And it's kind of understood, like, hey, I'm not going to tell the other team, obviously. I'm not going to say anything, hey, watch out for this. But when it happens, I will have context on it, which will make the call better. But I won't say anything till it's already happened. And so you could tell that Troy and Joe kind of knew this might happen and that they were really excited to see what Trent Scott's dance was. And then, Anthony, they saw it. And what we had was a Two Americas moment. Anthony.
Oh, man.
Anthony, can you please, as the resident expert here on this particular dance, can you tell America, specifically the one America that's not as informed, about what Trent Scott did and why?
So, first of all, America, is not a dance. It's not a stomp.
I was just using the word dance because it's a touchdown dance celebration. Okay. Perhaps I should use a more generic term.
There it is.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. Okay. My apologies.
So Trent Scott, he is an Omega man. He is a member of Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated, the same fraternity I'm a part of. So when he celebrated yesterday, he did something we call hopping, where, you know, you're barking. Like, I heard a few people barking, like, because he was barking while doing, you know, the hops and things of that nature. So, yeah, that's more so like what he was getting at. Let me see if I can.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Are we going to get a hop?
No.
Is there enough room? Not a full one. There's not enough room.
Not enough.
And also, I don't know if your pants are stretchy enough.
No, they are. So, what Trent Scott did, he barked first. So it sort of kind of looked like he's like marching a little bit, but that is what we do in our fraternity when we go to parties. And, you know, a lot of the guys, some just throw up the hooks. You see these a lot. I mean, he was doing it at the same time. But yeah, Malcolm Jenkins, he usually throws up his hooks. He's also celebrated by hopping. But yeah, some people really get active when they celebrate. He's a bigger guy, so, you know, he just kept it simple. Some people do spin, some people do all types of stuff.
He just, like, I have seen the hop before because I've seen you do it. I've seen Darren Haynes do it.
Yes.
I've seen it out and about in the world on social media or in person. You know, if somehow we were to just play Atomic Dog right now, Anthony would it would be involuntary. He would just start going. I'm actually kind of surprised you didn't play Atomic Dog.
I was thinking it. I was thinking it, and I didn't have it queued, and I was like, oh, it would have been good to, you know, cue it up. But
yeah, so I am aware, but it took me a second, in part because everyone's dancing around him. Yeah. They're dancing. He's hopping. And I will admit, I will, in front of God and everybody, admit, I texted Anthony. What did I? Hold on. I want to get this verbatim because I recognized what was happening. And I was like, wait, I know what that is. And then I messed it up. Where is our text? There it is. I said, let's see. That's text about the show. You know why I think I said what I said? Because you sent me that video of you on the field, and you said I stamped /I stomped down when you somehow were on the field after the Colts game.
Yeah, with Shane.
And then you're with Shane Steichen asking him to put you in the game.
Yeah.
Which was a hilarious thing that really happened in real life. And then so that was probably in my head. And then I asked you, are you going to stomp tomorrow on the show? So I said stomp instead of hop. But the stomp is a thing. It's just not this thing, right?
Yeah, it's not this thing.
Okay. No. I'm making sure that, like, Somewhere in my brain, there was an association. I don't know whether that's good or bad that I can't keep it straight.
Not that bad.
I get some points for awareness, but some negative points, obviously, for accuracy.
Yeah, so there was a movie called Stump the Yard, and
yeah,
they like step, I guess. We don't step. We don't step. We hop and we march.
Okay.
Yeah. We always have to, you know, clarify.
Yeah, no, of course. As you should. This is just me admitting my error, not some search for affirmation.
Yeah.
But at least I had some level of recognition.
You did indeed.
Which I feel like is some sense of pride, considering you're my producer.
One day, Craig, I will go full out. You will actually see, because I'm one of those, they call me a shiner, you know, when I hop. I'm one of those guys that really does the most. So I'll show you one of those. I do the splits. I've seen some videos. Oh yeah.
Yeah, no, like you, I think there was a wedding last year, maybe.
Oh, it was Zaire's. I think I put up
was
a video.
Was it Z's wedding?
I think it was Z's wedding. I think I lost my bow tie. I spun. I did like a 720 and spun and lost my bow tie. It was a lot. Yeah.
If there's video of that, I would like it. I want it to be able to just play it sometime. We should just play that in commercial breaks.
Oh man!
Here's Anthony Hoppin.
That would actually be crazy.
No one would tune out.
No, on the stream. But what I will tell people out there,
yes.
So this is fraternity base. We don't want to see you guys throwing up the hooks. We don't want to see you guys actually. We don't want to see that.
Unless you're a member of the fraternity, you don't get to do the hop.
Yes. Yes. There it is.
So, but you didn't know prior to this that Trent Scott was.
I did not. I saw his brands on his arm like afterwards. So if you see those, they sort of kind of look like Colt signs.
Yeah, like the Colts logo.
Yeah, if you see those,
but it's the Greek letter Omega.
Yeah, branded on people, then you know they're an Omega man.
That's how you know.
Yeah.
So Trent Scott, fellow Omega man, should I text PR right now and be like, we need to get Trent Scott on the show?
That would be dope.
And then I can just let you guys talk about hopping. I won't even do the interview.
That would be dope. That would be dope. We got him on here. Talk some football.
We'll work on that. Trent Scott, if we can pull it off on the show tomorrow. They're in Arizona. Dan Quinn's talking. We'll get you updated on what he had to say. But now you know. We say two Americas. There's an America that knows and an America that doesn't.
Yes.
Now all of you are in the America that knows. It's not exactly how that works, but it's good enough for the radio. All right, when we get back on the Hoffman Show, our pick 6 at 6. We did a heck of a job picking interesting players for guys that we wanted to watch last night. We will run through some of the who turned out to be key commanders in Washington's win next.